Hello, fellow shameless reality TV watchers. Welcome to Reality TV. It's Jody, and I'm back to talk about the nap that I took during Counting On this week, the Family Putman dog and pony show, and the episode of Teen Mom that had Janelle Evans-Eason shutting down her social media and people screaming abuse allegations. I'm caffeinated, I'm full of sarcasm, and lots of outrage. Let's do it. Let's start with Counting On. What the hell was TLC thinking this week? They took about 15 years of footage, erased all the evidence of monster human Josh Duggar, and condensed it all into a 60-minute episode. And like the sucker that I am, I kept thinking, oh, okay, after this commercial break for Secret Deodorant and Chantix, I'll get to see a scene of them making tater tot casserole. But no, they just kept giving us more and more clips of those Duggar boys, see what I did there, because they're ugly, get it, trying their best to give us their funny little witty Christian quips. They're the worst. Now, in these flashback clips, we see a lot of the girls, Jana, Jessa, and Joy, doing a lot with the younger siblings. And now I guess they call them buddy teams. Now, this buddy team thing is total bullshit. It used to be just two kids back in the day. Do you remember that? It was just like an older one and a younger one. But now it's grown to teams of four. When did this happen? I took a several year break watching these fools, but when did it go to four? That's bullshit. Because what does Michelle even do? It proves my theory that she's got it made in this family. She's got the easiest role ever. Because we see Joy. She's the one delegating, she's cooking, she's delegating the cleaning and the laundry to all the other siblings. And what's Michelle doing? She just stands behind her shoulder, nodding along like Gollum, which led me to believe if she's not taking care of the kids because they have these teams of four buddy teams, she's not cooking or cleaning or doing the laundry. Do you think she might have some social, mental, emotional issues too? I mean, I already told you my theory that she has got a really nasty, crazy temper behind closed doors. But do you think Jim Bob JB is protecting her image by just kind of phasing her out and making her be very quiet in the background? Or is it TLC just using their role as little as possible because of the whole Josh scandal? But still, why would that prevent her from actually doing anything around the house? Okay, so let's talk about Joy for a little bit. The roasting of Joy continues with endless commentary. I think it was for the first two segments altogether about her being a tomboy. Things like, oh, she's just so outdoorsy. She likes camping. Such a tomboy. Is that really like a tomboyish thing that you like to be outdoors and camping? Maybe it's the feminist in me, but I'm like, how does that have anything to do with being a tomboy? I mean, maybe she just wanted to go sleep outside so she wouldn't have to deal with Josh or to have to wrestle with Jedediah or Jeremiah or Julio or whoever it says that they wrestle together. Whatever mini Brokeback Cowboy that was, it was a little creepy. He's like, oh, trust me, I've tried to wrestle her and I can't beat her. I did once. Don't say that. We know what goes on behind closed doors in your house. So we see Joy and the two brothers Duggar graduation from high school. These kids, by the way, how did three of them graduate high school at the same time? They're not triplets. I know there's one set of twins in there, Jana and John David, but why are there three graduating at the same time? Probably because it's easier on Michelle. Like, she only has to do 1 year of curriculum instead of spreading it out. She's a lazy piece of shit. Okay, anyway, I told you I'm fully caffeinated this morning, so I'm on fire. All right, so we see their graduation ceremony, and these kids have been brainwashed to think that their graduation ceremony that is only presided over by Michelle in her formal denim skirt and JB, who is like the guest speaker, And they think that this is better than other high school graduations because Joy says, oh, other graduations, what do they? They just get to walk on stage. We have a huge party. Really, Joy? No one else has graduation parties that goes to a real high school? I'm 100% certain that they do. And the food served at those parties, normal people parties, didn't have 19 sets of hands at minimum manhandling it and probably a handful of Josie and Jennifer's boogers in it. Now, we get some scenes of Joy learning how to fly with John David. Well, you guys, the tides have turned. And while I don't take back what I said about John David jerking off in the Aldi pantry and sneaking some lukewarm Natty Light off the keg that he hides in their barn, I just have to say it. John David is warming up my cold, dead heart. It's like, I feel like my heart is the rose in Beauty and the Beast when it starts to come back to life. There's just something about his rare little smile where they were flying in that plane. Every so often, it just sneaks out. And he's Jana's twin. He can't be that bad, right? I'm thinking that they have some sort of secret language or secret pact. Like, God, this family is fucked up. And they're just sticking it out together. Because all the other kids have been bought and sold or married off, however they do this courtship thing. And those two are the oldest left in the house. Maybe they don't want to leave each other alone there. Or do you think Jim, Bob, and Michelle have kind of like set them up so they can't be betrothed or courted off or whatever? Maybe they like chain them up at night because we know Jim, Bob, and Michelle aren't doing the parenting because who's going to care for them if Jana and John David leave? All right, so a few highlights of this episode. The sons-in-law, Ben and Derek and Austin, go to Alexis Bellino's trampoline park. And, you know, it's just us bros hanging out. They actually said that. You know, how the bros hang out, like your husband and boyfriend, like they do in guys' nights, am I right? They're just like us. Oh, my God. Now, we also learned that Austin is one of only two children in his family. How did that happen? I mean, I'm hoping his mom didn't have some fertility issues, but are small families even allowed in this quiverful thing? Which kind of makes me like Austin more. He's got to at least be slightly more normal. And I do actually think he and Joy love each other, or they're in love, at least for now. They're still in that honeymoon phase, and we know that they've banged a few times because Joy's clearly knocked up. You can just tell the way they look at each other. Time will tell for these two, but I mean, you know, look at that change in Jessa and Ben. They used to look like Joy and Austin too. And those two are absolutely miserable now. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for the best for Joy, especially after they've just ripped her to shreds this whole season. Now, you know what, since we talked about Jessa and Ben, let's take a little zoom in on them. Jessa shows up to, in quotes, help Jana plan for Joy's bridal shower. Now, just as my opinion has changed on John David, I'm changing my stance on Jessa. I very shortly ago said that I thought she was the prettiest and the most normal of the Duggar girls. I fully retract that statement. No, she is such a brat. Jana ends up doing everything for this bridal shower. She even had to pretend to love Spurgeon, her nephew, when Jessa walked in the door and just dumped that kid in her arms and was like, oh, he's hungry for crackers. Like, go find it in the Aldi pantry. What the hell, Jessa? So Jana ends up brainstorming a theme for Joy's shower. Now get ready. Go grab a pen and paper. Pull up your little notes in your iPhone because you're going to want to jot this down, especially if you know a unique bride who likes to think outside the box, like a Janelle from Teen Mom. All right, ready? I'll go kind of slowly. Something old, something new, something borrowed. There's a little rhyme. It's so clever. Something blue. Yeah, that's their unique theme. I mean, I knew what something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue was when I was like three. Now, these complete morons take this theme to a whole different level in a completely different direction than what it's intended to be. The ultimate lazy ass slacker, Jessa, decides that she's going to take the borrowed category because, of course, her definition of borrowed is digging through her own personal shit, duplicates from her wedding 3 years ago. It's got dust and spurgeon crap all over it. She's on the floor digging shit out of her cabinets, and she's going to give all those things to Joy. And she says several times in the episode that they're borrowed. They're borrowed things, but she can keep them. That's called Salvation Army goodwill or garage sale, you selfish twit. And okay, this is a true story. Jody, little sidetrack here. I had during my bridal shower an elderly aunt. You know, we all have those kind of quirky ones. And she came to my bridal shower, and it was like an old laundry bucket, like a Home Depot bucket. Again, I'm from the Midwest. This is what we do. And inside, filled to the brim, was just piles of stuff. I remember there was like an old plastic orange peeler. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like a pen shape, and it just like scores the peel. There were some old light bulbs in there. There was one of those microwave plates. Like, do people still even use those? It's like a special plate, plastic plate for the microwave. And she was all proud to hand that thing over to me, like, Jessa. And you know, you have to like open the gifts in front of your guests. So I was literally just trifling through this bucket. And you know, she's all proud. Oh, it's great condition. She was just like, oh my gosh, I had this stuff at home. It's great. You're starting out. You can need this. And I still have this. My friend who was writing down all the gifts, you know, like for thank you cards and shit, finally just wrote down bucket of fun after like I was halfway through the bucket and I had to hold up and proudly display a rusted apple corer. Like, it had been used since 1971. All right. So anyway, so Jessa gets to clean out her garbage and pass it on. And now Jana is going to take care of the old categories with the brothers Duggar, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. And Jana gets to plan all the rest of the details. Free Jana. Now, they decide that they're going to call Ginge. They call her Ginge. I mean, I like Gingy better because Ginge is just a little too harsh, a little too short. But anyway, they're going to call Ginge, and Ginge is going to take the new and blue category because, quote, she likes shopping. Oh, boy. So they call Ginge, and Jessa tells her her role and then makes sure to say, well, Ginge, nothing big, nothing huge. You brat, Jessa. She just doesn't want Joy to have anything nicer than her. I'm team anyone, not Jessa. Okay, now, did I mention that I hate Jeremy, Gingy's husband? Everything about him screams fake Christian pastor to me. Mark my words, there will be a scandal about him not really believing the shit that he preaches. He wants the glory and admiration of being this kind, wholesome, great guy. I mean, and he thinks he's hot, doesn't he? Like, he thinks he's got shit going on with his stupid button-up 70s retro shirt. But really, you know that he's surfing, bodyboarding, and hanging out with half the cast of women that are in 90 Day Fiance. Well, he's in Mexico on a mission trip. I am not buying it. But it doesn't really matter because Gingy is digging it because she's lots of baby this, baby that. And she's even wearing, in the scene where she's spray painting the bucket, did you see her wearing jean capris with a tunic? That's some scandalous Duggar shit right there. She was not wearing a skirt, pants. Oh boy. Now we get a really brief scene of Jill and Derek. And for a split second, I was like, you know what? I kind of feel bad for this guy because there's got to be some sort of medical condition going on that makes him so ugly because his looks have drastically changed. And there's just something, I've already talked about the asymmetry of his face. There's just something wrong with him. However, I want to feel bad, but I don't because he's such a bigot and a homophobe and a racist that I think his transformation to ugly is just his karma. Now back to Princess Jessa, because I just can't get enough of blasting this chick. After she's done stuffing her garbage into the basket and shrink wrapping it for Joy, she decides she's going to write down some recipes to put in a box for Joy's new kitchen. And then she says, oh, except I rarely cook. Wait a hot minute. Didn't we get sold on them being these little housewives in training, making homemade Vicki Gumbelson casseroles and bread dough from scratch for the entirety of this 19 Kids and Counting series for the last 15 years? In the words of my favorite man, Buddy the Elf, you sit on a throne of lies, TLC. So back to Jessa copying recipes from her phone, and I really think it was just like recipes.com she went to. She includes her recipe for rolls, which is Michelle's, couscous, which is quite the universal worldly choice for a Duggar, and a recipe for beef and cabbage casserole. And then she tells us that it causes rumbles and you wouldn't want to serve it to a guest. I mean, thanks for the graphic image, Jessa. I never want to imagine 21 Duggars running for the bathrooms in that house. Thanks, Jessa. I mean, thank God it wasn't the Putmans, at least, because they only have two bathrooms. And by the way, I'm from the Midwest, and we have things like cabbage rolls. It's like, what, like a Polish dish, stuff like that. You know, it's like the ground beef, some rice, you like either put in like a pepper or a green pepper, you wrap it in cabbage leaves. But a cabbage and beef casserole, I don't want to know. That just sounds like it would look like some sort of meal Confederate soldiers had to eat in the fields or something. So after those three recipes, she is just wiped out. She's too lazy to finish. And she says, I'm sure Joy's just going to want to add some herself, so I'll just put the rest of these blank cards in here for her to fill out. You lazy mother effer. Her having to chase Spurgeon around, that's her karma. So meanwhile, Jana does some cool handwriting on hard hat helmets that say Mr. and Mrs. It's cute, whatever. I mean, are they ever going to use them? Probably not, but it's cute. And then the Duggar boys are going to go find some more garbage to pass on to Joy and Austin. So they go to their storage unit. The guys from American Pickers would get the biggest boner for this place. They find the most flammable, dangerous, rusted relic of Brady Bunch 1973 camping gear, an old camping stove. And there's original gas, fluid, propane, whatever, still in it. Now, it doesn't work, and it looks like the metal scrappers wouldn't even pick it up if I put it out on my curb on garbage day. But the three boys, Jorge, Jose, and Jesus, decide to take it outside, and they're going to start tinkering on it. And I was like, oh, God. This is foreshadowing and evidence that's later going to be used in like the 2020 Unabomber case. So they get to work on it, but it's like a damn turbo torch. The thing is shooting flames. And so then they're like, oh, turn it off quick. And they close it up and they're all ready to gift it to the happy couple. Now, it's a good thing Austin is good at construction, because that thing is going to have their new home up in flames in no time. Finally, next week, we're supposed to get to see Joy get married, and Joseph is going to propose to Kendra, the famous star of The Dolphin Tale. Finally, I cannot wait. Okay, meet the Putmans. Please let me get through this podcast without blowing a gasket like Bill did with his precious chimney. This family is just so boring, so basic, but at the same time, they make me want to beat my head against a wall. We start the episode with Barb and drama queen Bill getting the phone call from Dr. Hines. He's the OBGYN doctor that apparently handles all the mammograms and cancer concerns for this family. And just as I had predicted last week, there's no cancer. And Barb says, amen to that. And like I said before, TLC is definitely watering down their religious affiliation, because there was also a mailbox outside that they shot to that said God is love burned into it. So there's that. Bill is also calling Dr. Hines by his first name, so I'm thinking they might be friends in Christ or religious friends or something, and that's why they go see him for everything. Barb hangs up with Dr. Hines, and Bill immediately says, "I told you so." You know, like your partner would do if you were just dealing with a cancer scare for 3 weeks. He's just always got to be so self-righteous and king of his castle. And then he says to us, and trying to be like all gentle and sweet, the loving husband, "Barb is the epitome of beauty. I love her so much. She's so beautiful. We are one flesh." That's another word right up there with like the P word and mucus, flesh. Let's just, no. Ugh. "When she hurts, I hurt. And when I hurt, she laughs." And then they tell this funny little story of him falling down. And I screamed like, "What the fuck? Don't you dare have something in common with me, Putman's. No." So they run downstairs, and Bill has to have his glory moment and start yelling to the family, "Guess who called? Dr. Hines. God answered our prayers." Again, more God. And everyone's cheering, "Yay, Nene. I love Nene." And I'm all, "Yeah, me too, but the leaks kind." So we have Blair and Jamie, and thank the same God, the Putman's praise, that we don't see too much of these two. We have a scene with Blair at the apartment with her husband and children, where she should be, and she's sucking on pacifiers as a way to sanitize them for the new baby. Now, I looked it up and got sucked down a rabbit hole, and apparently it's about a 50-50 split. Some people after this 2013 study said that it's good to do that because you're transferring good gut bacteria to your baby, which can help prevent allergies. And then others are saying it's bad for their dental development and germs like E. coli and Salmonella. Regardless of who was right or wrong between Jamie and Blair, the way she was belittling Jamie's knowledge and his opinion on it, considering he's a doctor, was a little troubling to me. I wonder where she got that from. So she's also complaining of being overwhelmed with 3 kids. Well, no one forced you to have a 3rd kid, Blair. I cannot stand that. I'm not going to feel sorry for you when you already had 2 kids. If you're overwhelmed, don't have a 3rd. And then she says to Jamie, it's like Shark Week. It's like being in a cage. I have 2 kids running around and I have a newborn too. I don't know if anyone's caught on, but I have 3 kids and it's overwhelming. Oh, we caught on, Blair. No one is going to let us freaking forget you have 3 kids. They're also considering moving to Indiana for a fellowship that Jamie wants to do. And Blair almost busts a stitch while she's shitting her pants because she is afraid to be alone with her own kids. At the end of the episode, we get a preview of them sitting down with Bill to talk about it. I don't know where that's going to go because they made us think that they are going to go to Indiana, but Jamie is currently practicing at the same hospital in Michigan, so I don't know where that's going to go. Okay, it's time to cover the doctor's son, Blake, and his pretty wife, Megan. Let's see what's up with them. Okay, that was it. That's all we hear from these sparkling personality chatty Cathys. So now we get to spend the rest of the episode focusing on Billy and first Becky from Roseanne, Jen. Becky Jen. The ladies apparently have a day every few weeks where they dye their hair, do their nails, ha 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 ha, and wax their eyebrows. I don't know why, but I'm doubting this happens ever or as often as they say it does. Then the conversation turns to Billy and Becky Jen going on a date to have some alone time. And then the mom, Barb, says, "Oh, we know what alone time is." And they all laugh and laugh and laugh. Am I the only one? Maybe I'm a prude. I grew up Catholic, but this is so bizarre and gross to me. Your mother-in-law talking and joking about your sex life. Ugh. Becky Jen tells us this hilarious story about how Blair used to hear her and Billy having sex, and it would go on so long that Blair would wonder how much longer they could go for. And that it's no big deal now because now just them having sex is just a regular conversation in the house. Okay, I love Judge Judy. Okay, I'm going to be Judge Jody. Judge Jody overruled. This has got to end. Referring to time with your husband in front of your in-laws as garage time, it's not cute, it's not funny, it's gross. Me and my Catholic grade school Stations of the Cross booklet say no. So then we get to talk about Becky Jen. I'm going to call her BJ. We get to talk about BJ's weight the whole rest of the episode. She's being honest, at least, and telling Billy that she appreciates him and appreciates that he doesn't care about her roles and her insecurities about gaining weight. And then he gives her the worst advice ever. And I'm coming from a place where I'm not the tiniest girl either, so I can understand BJ's insecurities. But Billy says, the more you make fun of it, the more you conquer it. No, Billy. It should be more along the lines of don't focus on it. If it's going to make you feel good to work out and lose weight, that's fine. Do something that makes you feel good. Making fun of yourself about it does not make you conquer it. Trust me. I have a PhD in self-deprecation studies and strategies, but drawing attention to your own insecurities with jokes about yourself doesn't necessarily make you an empowered person about it. Does that make sense? And he says that she should talk to her skinny bitch sisters-in-law about her weight. Great idea, Billy. Should I talk with Bernie Madoff about what I should do with my 403B too? You idiot. He also makes some weird statement about how he wouldn't remarry if Becky Jen died first. And like, then he says something like, oh, she's older than me and will probably die around the same time. And then BJ starts crying. I did not get that at all. What the hell does that mean? I don't understand. So she ends up taking his stupid advice and they end up in the kitchen with the girls. Remember, and it's not women, they're girls. And she just starts breaking down in tears. And the skinny sisters-in-law are just staring at her because they've all been taught to suppress their emotions in this house. And they're looking at Barb like, can we feel now, governor? And Becky Jen is just continuing to cry. And they all settle on the decision to take walks around the house. Probably because that's as long as their leashes will allow them to go. Now, in a confessional, hot wife Megan, the one who was silent earlier, tells us that they all have their insecurities. Like when Father Bill tells her that he should use her shower, maybe. And that she doesn't want Becky Jen to compare herself to her. I thought that was kind of telling because BJ didn't specifically go into that really. So Megan must be comparing herself a little bit, maybe thinking she is a little better. I don't know. Maybe I am just the cynical overweight girl. So Becky Jen ends up squeezing herself into this dress that Billy bought her. The famous scene that we've been seeing in the previews. It's not the dress, it's me. No, it's the dress. What the fuck was that thing? It was like a child's Daisy May with a bad halter collar. It was just bad, not flattering on her figure at all. And she's not even that fat to me. She's just like a mom who's got young kids. And then their big date out is they go mini golfing. Could Billy have picked a worse outfit for mini golfing? If I were Becky Jen's stylist or friend or sister-in-law, I would have told her, if she was wanting to do a skirt dress thing, maybe go with like a long maxi, or even better, if we could steer away from the dresses, do like a cute cropped pant, cute cropped jean, maybe a little wedge, a tank top with a cardigan. She seems like a cardigan type, or maybe a tank top. She was feeling a little daring or sexy with like a sheer boho gauzy tunic. I'd love to style her. Now, let's fast forward to Brandon and Casey. Somewhere in this episode, they go to see Dr. Hines, who's now also become a geneticist, because he delivers the news from her BRCA genetic testing and it came back negative. Honestly, fantastic, great. I really am truly happy for them. Then we fast forward to the end of the episode, and it's Casey's 30th birthday, and they have a, in quote fingers, surprise party, because she totally knew when she like opened that door, she already had a surprise expression on her face. And instead of going to the place that she loves, Ludington, they just write it on a poster and stick it on a tree, Ludington. I'm like, oh God, great. Happy birthday, Casey. They have tents and picnic tables set up. And then it ends with them lifting her up and shoving her face first into a picnic table that's solid wood with a cake on top of it. But imagine your face just going like 10 miles an hour straight into a wood table. Apparently, Bill was the funny jokester that thought this up years ago when he would shove his kids' faces into their cakes. I mean, can you imagine? What kind of a freaking monster is he? So then it breaks into this food fight, and I'm thinking, now they're officially idiots. That damn washing machine from last week is broken, and now they're going to have to deal with washing cake out of clothing? These assholes will probably bring them to the laundromat again so they can just clog up other people's machines and drains with their cake clothes. The only bright spot, though, was when Bill wiped out when he was running away from people chasing him with cake. Oh my God, that could have been really fun. I would have grabbed a massive piece and just hauled that thing straight at his mug. And you know that I watched that thing like 3 times just to see him wipe out on that grass. It was spectacular. No one came to help him. Oh, it was great. So now they say at the end of the episode, on the season finale of Meet the Putmans. God, I hope so. I mean, like my ears perked up like, please, please. I can't deal with this family. And I hope all of us watching hasn't given TLC enough ratings to renew this another season. Up next, let's find out what happened on Teen Mom to cause this huge outward pouring of hate towards Janelle and her new husband, David. On this episode of Teen Mom, Leah does not give any speeches, which made me happy, but also very, very sad and disappointed because her special flavor of public speaking makes me so very delighted on the inside. We always have to start with Chelsea because she does nothing and somehow still earns an MTV paycheck. She's planning wedding number 2, which in real life just took place this last weekend. I still don't have any understanding why she's having a second wedding. If it's because she can drink because she's not pregnant now, why not just have an awesome party? She's changed her venue a few times. She's meeting with her wedding planner and she's sporting the Victorian, not polygamous poof again. And she goes cake tasting with Aubrey. Snooze, snore. The sister wives did it better. And Cody has better hair than Chelsea at this point. Aubrey wants to have her last name changed to be hyphenated to match with Chelsea Colon Watson. I think that's great, but I don't need a whole episode about it. And I swear, I don't want to cause a rift between the three of us or anyone, but I've been around enough babies and early intervention specialists with my own kids that I think Watson might need one of those baby helmets to shape his head. It's not a criticism. It's just an observation. All right, Brianna. Brianna, baby, I got you. She's having a tough go at it because Lewis is a dick and he's already bailed. Roxanne, being the best mom to ever be shown on MTV, is got her back and is telling her, no, you're amazing. You're doing an amazing job with these girls. Fast forward one night and little brand new baby Stella's hands and feet are turning blue. She's having a hard time breathing. Brianna is on top of it. She's called the hospital. She's going in. She's texting Lewis that she's bringing Stella to the hospital and he doesn't respond. What an asshole. That's all we really see of Brianna, I'm sure, because she had bigger and more important things to be doing with the baby at this point than MTV to be filming her. But we're left with a preview of Brianna saying that Stella has 3 holes in her heart. And we see Brittany's reaction, which broke my heart. What a great sister. If you get a chance, you've got to check out Brittany's Twitter. She's obsessed with this Asian boy band, and she has been for months, and it's adorable how excited she gets about it. It's just cute and funny. I love her. Now, you know who's not adorable? Kale. Kale and her stubbornness and her two kids are all set to go on a vacation to St. Thomas. According to Kale, Javi has agreed to drop his child support case. According to Javi, who has been talking to Peach, did she change sides, that friend Peach? Because I thought she was Kale's friend. Kale said that she was going to drop the PFA, the protection order, against Javi, but he still has not seen proof of that. And he's not going to drop the child support case until he's seen that she's dropped the PFA, because that could harm his military career. Now, Javi goes to Kale's house to drop off Lincoln, and he's wearing slippers, which I just thought was hilarious. And he brings Lincoln inside, and he starts opening his mail that's still sent to Kale's house. And immediately, she's got to jump on him and says, "Why do you always open your mail here?" And then he goes to sit down on the couch to talk to her for a minute, and she goes, "Why do you always want to sit down?" It's called mature, civil co-parenting, Kale. You should know about it at this point. You've had three kids, three dads. So she's so insistent on making other people look like they're going after her. She needs serious therapy. She's right up there with Janelle and Farrah to me at this point. So we find out that Javi doesn't stop the child support issue. If he doesn't, she can't leave the country with the kids, get on that plane to St. Thomas, because she could be in contempt of court. Now, Kale's all pissed off about this, but all I'm thinking is, all you have to do is drop the PFA. Like, this is your issue, Kale. This is not Javi's issue. But Kale is ticked off because he hasn't dropped it. So she's saying to us and her friend, "Well, this is going to be my last vacation I can take before the baby, and he's going to ruin it." Again, this is not his issue. This is your issue, Kale. Everyone else does not have to put their life on hold, things that are important to them, because you are pregnant, or you are graduating, or you are working out, or getting a new tattoo, or training your waist in an Instagram ad. So she's bitching to her friend about it, that he's an asshole. He's so selfish. All he has to do is drop it. "I went to the court this morning, got the PFA dropped, sent a screenshot to him, and he's not going to drop it until we talk on the phone." Is it just me, or does that sound pretty reasonable? Like, okay, he got it. He just wants to touch base with her before he does it. But no, that's not good enough for Kale. So she calls him up with her friend there sitting beside her. She's all fired up. He gets on the phone, and Javi's like, "Yeah, go ahead. Like, that's great. Sounds good. Have fun. Takes lots of pictures. I'm sure Lincoln and the boys are going to have fun. It's going to be a great vacation. You won't be able to do it for a while. Call me when you get home." And that stupid look on Kale's face, it was amazing. She got called out on camera for making shit up, causing drama. Oh, it was just karma coming right back at her. All right, now our Tony Robbins of West Virginia, Leah. Right off the bat, the girls are in the car eating gas station sandwiches and fighting over a bag of beef jerky. This is for real. I'm not being sarcastic. Now, Allie is the one that has glasses, dark hair, and muscular dystrophy. And then there's also Aaliyah, but her name's Aaliyah Grace. So they alternate between calling her Aaliyah and Gracie. So I'm just going to stick with Gracie so we don't get the two mixed up. Because seriously, Allie and Aliana and Aaliyah, like, could you pick two more similar names to name your twins? So anyway, Gracie, the blonde one, the mini Leah, just starts wailing on Allie over this beef jerky. And then when Leah calls her out on it, that little blonde thing just tries to manipulate her way out of the blame that is squarely on her. That is not a good precursor for that girl's future in middle school and high school. I predict a complete full circle repeating the pattern of Leah. Now then we see the two girls with Corey. I love Corey. I think he gets better looking with age. He gets less beaver-like as he ages, and he's a good dad to those girls. they're out fishing, which is super cute. And Gracie's got her fishing pole. She's fishing, having a good time, not acting up. And little Allie is in her wheelchair because the only time she ever uses it is with Corey because Leah refuses. And Allie is hot. She's baking in the sun. And Corey's just telling her, okay, just wait a minute, let Gracie finish, and then we'll go. I thought it was a good decision. It was a good compromise. Sometimes as a parent, one of them's going to be unhappy. So he's trying to meet him in the middle there. And that's where Allie, just miserable, starts singing, I'm ready, let's go. I'm ready, let's go. I'm ready, I'm sweating. I mean, I have been singing that for days, and I will continue singing that because that is me every goddamn day at the park in the summer with my kids. I'm ready, I'm sweating. So they walk back to the car, and that little Gracie just starts punching Allie. I love that kid. Allie is my favorite, and no one will touch my Allie. Gracie needs one day in my house, and that girl will have her shit in order. It would just take one mom look from me, and that girl would know that I was serious. I don't think Leah is the type of mom that ever tells her kid no, or at least off camera. She's one of those parents that will just be like, oh, kids will be kids. And they let their kids run the show because it just takes too much time and patience to talk things through with your kids, to have them be upset with you. Like, oh, just let the kids wear no shoes in Walmart. Kids will be kids. No. So Corey is going to have a talk with the producer. So he puts the girls in the car, shuts the door, and rolls the windows up. Why do they all do this? I mean, I guess I know why, because they can't have the engine running because the microphones will pick it up. But could someone just crack a window for him, for Christ's sake? At least Corey admits that Gracie needs therapy because she has some attention and aggression issues, probably linked to the fact that Allie gets more attention because of her disability. But you know what? He said it. Thank God Corey is the best. So Corey then goes on to meet Leah in an abandoned grocery store parking lot to switch the girls' off. And Corey's telling Leah how he really thinks they cannot wait any longer. Gracie's got to get into some therapy. And Leah is just looking with googly, dreamy eyes at Corey because it's clear she is still totally head over heels in love with him. And she's always trying to act like she's smart, use big words, or agree with him, even though she'll later go back to her sister and bitch about how she disagrees. But in the moment, she's like, whatever you say, Corey. Now, it took me until this episode to figure out what it is that Leah does when she's talking with people. And I figured it out. You know how with kids, young kids, who are probably at the same intellectual level as Leah, if you're talking to them and they want to show that they agree with what you're saying, or that like, oh, I know what you're talking about already, they'll just start echoing the last word of whatever you said. And in your mind, you're like, okay, just let me finish my thought. No, just listen. Okay. That's what Leah does. Okay. I'm going to do my best Corey and Leah voices and try to mimic what they do. I really think she's aggressive. Aggressive, and she needs therapy. Therapy? Yeah, therapy. Yeah, I was saying the same thing. She needs therapy. And you know Leah really is just thinking, oh, crap. Gracie is going to out me to her therapist about how I only heat up beefaroni for breakfast and how I drive erratically with one hand on my mouth and the other hand in a bag of jerky. Now we end the scene with the serious talk that Leah is having with Gracie on the swings. I would have said things a lot differently and more child-centered, but Leah did her best, which is all we can ask for, right? I am doing my I ams. I am happy that you pulled it together to bring your kids to a park, Leah. Now, Janelle, deep breath, everyone. This was a dark episode for Miss Congeniality, Janelle Evans Eason. So this part was filmed just this past summer, so not too long ago, which is why it's still so concerning now, like October. David is practicing his ransom note lettering by painting save the date on the fence so that it can be used in the crime scene photos. Radar Online. And the camera crew shows up to film the happy couple getting their photos taken. but it's crickets and no one's coming to the door. Producers are texting Janelle, "We are supposed to be filming this morning. What's going on?" Janelle texts them back and says that she and David are arguing and David's going to call the police if they don't pack up and leave in the next 5 minutes. So they're like, okay, whatever. We're out of here. We're not dealing with this drama. Ridiculous. So they come back the next day and Janelle and David are inside and they're acting like they are the Cleaver family. Janelle's feeding Ensley, who I also think needs a helmet. And the producers ask about their fight yesterday, like, hey, what was going on? Now, David is acting like he has no idea what they're talking about and is staring at Janelle like, fight? No, we didn't fight yesterday. What are you talking about? Focus on the positive. And he puts on his sunglasses inside. Like, that was really creepy. Then Janelle just says, I was just in a bad mood. Ooh, let's go look at my jellyfish. And she's got some weird jellyfish aquarium in her room. Mm-hmm. So David says he's going to take off to go to the hardware store where he's going to only pay cash and purchase just a few items needed to bury the bodies so it's not too suspicious. And Southern Belle Janelle is going to drive to go pick up Jace. Well, Barbara calls and asks Janelle if she has booked Jace's birthday party venue yet. And Janelle loses her shit and starts screaming that Barbara needs to give her a break. She just finished Kaiser's birthday and she just finished David's birthday. Well, Janelle, throwing multiple birthday parties are bound to happen when you start collecting kids and fiancés like Beanie Babies. So Barbara's like, whatever, I'll just plan one on my own. And if you want to plan one, go ahead if that's how you're going to be. Poor Jace, right? Ugh. So we finally find out why Barbara is so fired up when she made that call. Jace has apparently just come from his therapy appointment. And Barbara tells Janelle that Jace told his therapist that Janelle's been saying that Jace is going to go back and live with her. So the therapist wants Janelle and only Janelle, not David, to go to a session with Jace, the two of them and the therapist. Well, I think that's great. Like that was needed about 7 years ago. Now, Janelle denies that she said Jace is going to go live with her. And then something in her mind, as she was saying it, clicked. Like, oh, well, now I'm accusing Jace of lying. So she says, I didn't say he was going to live with us. We said in the future, if you move in, yada, yada, yada. She literally yada, yada'd custody. So then she says to Barbara, well, of course I'm going to say that. You think I'm not going to take you back to court in a year? And so Barbara says exactly what I was thinking in that moment. Why are you so miserable? I mean, Janelle is messing that kid's life up just for the sake of revenge on her mother, the same woman who saved her ass from getting that kid put in the foster system. She should be kissing her ass. Now, Jace has an exchange in the car with Janelle about why are you so angry, mommy? And he actually defends Barbara and saying like she's not angry at you, which I thought was very brave of Jace, and I'm glad that he said that. Now, here's where it gets tough to watch. Janelle picks up Kaiser from, I don't know, one of the parents or the grandparents or someone in his life. And I'm not a car seat police person, but that kid was not old enough for the car seat that she had him in. And he was hanging out the top of the car seat. They're back on the land and they're taking these stupid, staged, fake, lovey-dovey save the date photos. And Janelle sets up this little camera and then barks at the producer, Kristen, 4 times to come and take their photos. Like, how rude are you? And Kaiser's playing with Jace, and then Kaiser takes a stick or something and whips Jace and screams, "Shut up, Jace." You know, that is not what most 2-year-olds are screaming unless they hear that on the regular with their caregivers. So while Janelle and David are taking these disturbing stage photos, and I say disturbing because they're just too easily pretending to be calm and loving and nurturing in this couple in love, which we all know they are not. I mean, they almost called off their wedding hours before. And they're pretending to kiss. Janelle's flashing her ring in these very Pinteresty photos. And Kaiser, like any two-year-old is going to do, toddles over and barely looks at, and he might have touched the camera. It was so hard to tell, and it was so quick. And Janelle and David freak the fuck out and start screaming at him. And David just piles over there, lifts up Kaiser by like his elbow, drags him across the land, and throws him into the swing set. Disturbed isn't even a word, the right word. Alarmed, concerned. I mean, let's see someone three times your size, David, throw you around and see how you like it, you one galoshed, cross-eyed weirdo. And what's so gross is they go straight from like beating up Kaiser to back pretending that they're hugging and holding like nothing. And Kaiser is in the background. He's now crying. He's all alone. No one to comfort him, and he's screaming, "Feed me." And then Janelle goes, "Oh, Kaiser, he must be tired." She's so dense and selfish and out of touch. Like, she probably hasn't even thought, "Oh, maybe I should stop and tend to my kid, or maybe feed him a meal. He might be hungry." These stupid photos are more important to her, which, how much money did they get for those? I really hope it was worth it. Now, people are outraged because of this episode. Even some of the other Teen Mom girls were commenting on that scene and that snapshot photo of Kaiser screaming, "Feed me." So Janelle shut down all her other social media pages, and she is claiming that she's going to quit the show. Yeah, right. And that MTV just didn't subtitle Kaiser correctly, that he wasn't saying, "Feed me." And she screenshotted her signature on a speech evaluation. So she's saying like MTV are assholes because they're picking on kids with speech issues. No, it's that everyone is seeing the truth and she has to deflect blame and attention elsewhere. She's the worst. I hope she leaves the show and she's stuck with this monster that she married, the same person she's choosing over her children. We'll see what the fallout is over the next week, and I'm also going to go and look up to see which TED Talk Leah is going to be speaking at. Well, that does it for today's episode. Please go and check out two episodes that I did with Carrie at the Sip and Shine podcast. We talk a lot about reality TV, 90 Day Fiancé, and family secrets via DNA results. And we also dig deep on the Trailside Killer, which was the serial killer that tried to kill Lisa Rinna's mom back in the 1960s. If you're a true crime, mystery, reality TV fan, you'll love it. We even bag on Odge quite a bit, which was way too easy and way too much fun. I'll be back next time with 90 Day Fiancé. Remember that episode 2 of the new season is already up on the TLC Go app, so check it out early. It's really good. Until then, join the Facebook group and Instagram at Welcome to Reality TV. Twitter at RealityTVPod or WelcomeToRealityTV.com. Please rate and leave a review on iTunes, also on Stitcher and Podbean. Have a great week and weekend. Bye.